will be there. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to Wrestling Comics, our regular every other Sunday talk about comics, pulp culture, and wrestling. Here with tonight, our special guest, Ed. Pronounce your last name for me.
Ed Cannell.
Ed Cannell.
Be close to that.
And Ed is one half of Smooth Condition. And also one of the partners of Suspicious Behavior Productions, and they're the guys behind is the only actually good wrestling comic book I've ever read, which is Planet WrestleTopia.
Yes, Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia. Yes, I just made up Smooth Condition because I was like I always had to type something stupid in for my nickname, but I thought that was gonna be a cool name for a tag team. You know, it makes no sense. Smooth Condition, sure.
It can work.
It's got a very late 80s kind of vibe to it. I like it.
Okay.
Just to go around, next to me, the head of Ghost Show Press is Christopher McLaughlin. How you doing, Chris?
I am well, sir. How are you?
All right. I'm all right. Cynthia Celeste Miller is right next to them. Hey, Sean Vera is saying hi to us in the comments. Hey, Sean, good to see you, sir. And directly below Cynthia in the Brady Bunch grid is Tom Filsinger, who is Dark Menace Tom this evening.
Yes, sir. And I'm happy to be here.
So
and I'll try to be dark.
Turn the lights off. So I need to let tell you right up front. I have an 8-year-old boy upstairs with food poisoning. And we got him in bed, but at any moment I might be tapped to go comfort and or clean puke. So just let you know if that's happened. I've made Chris aware that he is the designated backup charming guy who gets to take over hosting duties if I have to go do fatherly stuff. So just so we know. And before I forget,
it's like that weird thing how like the Secretary of Education can become president if like everything else falls apart. one of those deals, you know.
Right.
It is exactly like that. So I wanted to, before I go any further, we're talking about wrestling comics, and but I just wanted to point out, Tom and Ed, you guys are working in very similar fields. Ed's doing a comic book about a galactic wrestling tournament, Invasion of Planet WrestleTopia, and Tom, you do a long-running card game. That's Champions of the Galaxy, which is pretty much the same subject. Seems like you guys should have a drink or something.
A virtual one, yes. Hey, Ed, how long you been doing that?
Well, the comic book, we did 6 issues of this miniseries. We started, 2017. We were working on the story kind of well, before that. But our day jobs for both Matt and I is we work in video games. And I've been doing for about 20 years and Matt almost as long. And so we have been that's our primary, job is writing for video games and we're immersed in that culture. And then the comic book was really just to be, we created this, the story, and we just had a huge desire to kind of put it out there in the world so it would exist, right? Like, as you can write scripts and things, and nobody wants to read them. No one cares. So we paid artists to bring it to life in this 6-issue miniseries, and that we started again, 2017, and just finished up. I don't want to say in the early, or late 2020. It took a while, but it's funny. You said the name Champions of the Galaxy, and I wonder how long you've been doing that because it definitely rings a bell with me. And I
wonder. Yeah, well, 1986.
Oh, okay.
And continuously since then, yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering, did you ever advertise that in like wrestling magazines?
That's where you might have seen us. We were in PWI throughout the whole 90s.
Okay.
And into the 2000s, but especially in the 90s.
Okay. All right. Because I know that, when I was a kid in the 80s, I did buy a wrestling game or two. And it may not have been Champions of the Galaxy, but I would, I was one of those kids that would buy those games, advertised in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. and they were role-playing games light on the role playing, but they were really fun. And so I may have missed out on yours.
You know who bought from us that way was Brian Danielson, now known as Daniel Bryan.
Yeah,
and he was one of our earliest fans.
That's great. That's awesome.
Well, hey, wanted to say right before we got started, I interrupted Cynthia, who was telling a story about a match between a Happy Humphrey and who was the other guy?
Haystacks Calhoun.
Johnny Valentine had pulled a what they call a rib on somebody, I think.
Yeah, the match in question wasn't Happy Humphrey versus Haystack, but it was Haystacks versus somebody, and I don't know who. And I'm pretty sure it was Johnny Valentine that pulled this prank, but I can't 100% swear to this. Mm-hmm. But if my recollection is right, during the whole thing, Haystacks got out of the ring, because, you know, he's not going to bump out of the ring. I mean, that's a cinch, right? And mm-hmm. But he's out there, and he had to use the steps to get back into the ring. Well, I think it was Johnny Valentine came out and swiped the steps and ran back with them. So he lost on a count out, because what else are they going to do? And I just he was very mad.
And I believe the fellow in the center of the picture here in the overalls is who we're talking about, Haystacks mm-hmm. Calhoun.
And you know the great thing. You know the great thing. Tex McKenzie's on the left.
Yeah.
Great thing about this photo, you could put this in my high school yearbook, and nobody would notice. This, would this is like everybody I went to high school, and like everybody that taught me in high school. I'm pretty sure the guy on my right was my psych teacher.
Probably. You know, Haystacks isn't as big there as he wound up being.
Yeah.
So, hey, before I get further, if I want to buy your game, Ed, and I actually have already bought it, but if I wanted to these days, you're not on Comixology anymore.
Oh, so yeah. So we are changing some things around, but right now it's on Amazon Kindle.
Okay.
And we're getting them on iBooks. We have, like, I don't know, like the first couple on iBooks. And then we will have them back on Comixology. But we're also doing a Kickstarter launching May 11th to put the entire miniseries in one, you know, sort of collected volume.
Oh, okay.
We'll do some fun stuff, and we'll have some fun rewards.
Do you have a pre-launch page we can put people to for that?
That would be smart. We don't.
All right.
We're working on it. We're getting there. It's our first Kickstarter, so we're on the learning curve. But I think we're getting close, and we got to kind of figure it out. We're going to do some fun things with some trading cards for some of the characters and a little a poster for in the comic book. In the comic book, they do a pay-per-view called Galacto Massacre, where mm-hmm. the protagonist, Rock and Roll Rory Landell, has to defend his claim of being the galactic champion of the universe against the one true galactic champion from outer space. And it's decided that they'll wrestle in a pay-per-view to decide, you know, Earth's fate. And anyway, so we'll have a poster that, you know, like the WWE does for WrestleMania, we'll have a poster for Galacto Massacre. Yeah, so it'll be fun stuff. But digitally, we'll have it back on Comixology before too long. And I guess I would say we go to Amazon Kindle if that's your thing, and you can read it now.
Okay, cool. Well, we've had Johnny before, and I've read your whole miniseries, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, a fun mix of humor and then camp sci-fi elements and wrestling. And we're having this show tonight because we started talking about wrestling and comics couple weeks ago, and goddamn, we were having trouble thinking of good ones.
I have heard good things about the Headlock series, which I have.
Me too. Right.
Not a series, but I got this gem here.
Right? Oh yeah, yeah. Audrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, Audrey Sitterson.
Oh, that's great stuff there.
Yeah, it is. Cool. I've read a lot of books on wrestling history, and that was my favorite. Regardless of the format, I mean, it is just, the art's great. They're pretty comprehensive. I wish I would have spent a little more time on Frontier Era, but I mean, it is what it is. You know, they got to you know, more people want to hear about the later stuff. So I understand why they went a little light there, but still, it was very comprehensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the problem that a lot of wrestling comics have, but certainly the WWE comics and even the older ones, I think WCW had a mini series, is I think whoever's in charge at like the WWE level is pretty, I have a feeling, I'm guessing, but I have a feeling they really want, everything to kind of be, kayfabe, right? The Rock is Rock, and Stone Cold is Stone Cold, and they're all, they're reading a comic book is kind of like watching them on TV. They're like, I'm going to get you at SummerSlam, and they're not like hanging out backstage having a beer together, laughing about how hard The Rock oversold the Stone Cold Stunner. They're in character all the time, and I think that's got to be really hard probably for the writers and the artists to try to make that add something new that to the comic book that you're not already seeing on TV.
Right.
Do you remember the Unlimited Class Wrestling Federation in Marvel? They kind of went into that a little
bit. Oh, yeah.
The Thing joined up, and he found out that later it was like, had become more scripted, and he was all pissy about it. And
yeah.
Kind of grumpy, like, oh, what's this? Right? I don't remember the exact dialogue.
Dude, you're fine.
They missed their opportunity to do the scene where they cut to the stands and Ben Grimm's in tears going, it's still real to me, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're 600 pounds and you're made of rock.
Well, I'd like to go back to Headlocked Comics for a second. I think those were good. And one of the people that I work with named Todd Jorschel thinks it was a great series. And we work with these, with this. This was written by, let me get the name right, Michael Kingston. Okay. And it has art by Jerry Lawler, some of the covers. Jerry Lawler's a good artist. Jerry Lawler's very good. Yeah. And we sell some of their comics, by the way, just so I can mention this if anybody's interested, at our Phil Singer Games store, because we released a card set that is in conjunction with them. We think that, like I said, that they do a very nice job, and it's probably one of the best wrestling comics that have been produced.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about it, and I've yet to sample it, but I'm also really impressed about, he has all these really cool wrestlers appear with him at cons.
Been there, done that. Yep.
Yeah, like Booker T, and I want to say Ric Flair maybe at some point, and I really want to see him. I really want to go see visit Mr. Kingston at a con and buy some of his books from him personally when all that stuff gets going again.
Yeah.
Tom's done that a lot. In fact, I went and played Champions of the Galaxy against Buff Bagwell at Genocon.
Yeah.
Kicked we had his heck. Ass too. Kicked his ass.
Yeah, you know what was?
I was really thrown off that he didn't know who. Who was it? It was one of them, the older wrestlers. He's like, I don't know who this is, but I'm like, Johnny Valiant. It was Johnny Valiant. I'm like, what?
Really?
Yeah. Nice guy though.
Let me say this: when we've had wrestling guests, some of them play along and sign autographs, but some of them actually learn to play. Buff Bagwell got to a point where he was trying to teach other people how to play.
Yeah.
And we had Hacksaw Jim Duggan, same deal. And I'll tell you my Hacksaw Jim Duggan story sometime. I got to tell you that. That's one's from Gen Con Origins. That one was Origins. And it's a great one. Maybe later today or sometime. But when I saw Jerry Lawler once at San Diego Comic-Con, he was drawing for fans superhero art. And we chatted a little bit, and I was hoping that he would draw some stuff for us. The only wrestler we had that actually drew a card for us was Tony Atlas, who drew his own card. And he was a good artist too. But Jerry Lawler's really good. And the one story I have about Jerry Lawler there is at conventions, the talk always turns to what's going on. Where's the party's going to be?
Right.
And he said, do you want to go to a party in a penthouse here in San Diego? I said, yeah.
Yes.
And he said, just show up. He gave me the time, the place, and ask for me. So I went there, showed up, lines of people, you know, and invitation only. And he wasn't there. And so I said, I know Jerry Lawler. They said, okay, you can come in. I got in anyway.
funny enough, if I'm crashing a party, I just go up and tell him I know Tom Filsinger.
That'll get you kicked out.
No.
So this is a Jerry Lawler art right here, isn't it?
No, but yeah, but you might want to find his headlocked cover.
Okay.
Oh, that might be one, but he did number one, if I remember correctly. There are probably some more. Yeah, that's good.
I'm mixed to one of the old Norman Rockwells. But
right. Too small for me to see there, but
yeah, it's pretty small up here. Let me stop sharing.
You put in Jerry Lawler headlocked, and it should come up his covers.
Okay, cool. So hey, if we're not talking headlocked, or we're not talking Invasion of Planet WrestleTopia, and actually Jacob Blackman, hey Jacob, in the comments mentioned he's really enjoying the Masters of the WWE Universe toys, which have little character comics that come with each one. Can we think of good wrestling comics? We have examples of good, bad, or just memorable ones.
Wrestling comics.
Well, let me just add another one I was reading.
Okay.
I would speak more intelligently about it, but I've still got things packed away, and I haven't unpacked since we moved to Sedona, Arizona several years ago. But I was reading Ringside by Image Comics.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I have the – thank you for bringing that up. I have the Ringside volumes, and I've had the good fortune. Joe Keating is the writer, and he actually lives here in Portland, where I'm from, and I've got to know him, and that was maybe one of my first introduction to sort of him and his work was Ringside. But I've actually got to know and work with Joe. Joe was interested in writing for games, so we got him involved in some video game projects. But thanks for bringing up. Joe's a great writer. It's interesting. It's a little bit, maybe it's kind of like WrestleTopia, where it's sort of about wrestling, but it's really like with Joe, it's more about the story about these people. And it's almost kind of like a crime noir story, really, that happens to have a wrestling wrapped around it. But it's really good. I think there's two volumes. And I have them both, and I'm a big fan of Joe, and I really liked Ringside a lot. It was really cool.
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining too.
Yeah,
I don't know how many issues it ran. I think Headlock ran 15, but I'm not positive of that.
Well,
I'm gonna find out right now.
What's that?
There are three trade paperbacks on Image.com you can buy at Ringside. So mm-hmm. Ran for a few years anyway. I think I might have found that, Jerry. Oh, well, hang on.
Nice.
He's got all of them right there. Okay.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever read Misfit Wrestling Federation?
No.
It was by Bombshell Comics. It was quite a while ago now. I mean, not like a long time. I couldn't even tell you when. But I found an issue of it in a comic store. And the art isn't, you know... I mean, it's indie art, and it's not bad, but I mean, it's not like as polished as, but I have the one issue, and I have no idea how long it went, because I never was able to get it, find another one. I need to ask
you. Is that it right there?
Yeah, that's it. Mm. And, yeah, so I mean, you know, it's not as polished as a lot of them, but it was pretty interesting. It was like, took place in the early 70s in the Florida Territory. I mean, it was a completely fictional version of the Florida Territory. But what was the main character? Don the Mongrel or something like that. But I remember really trying to find it because I have it around here somewhere. But I'll be damned if I can find it at all. But it took place in the early, and there's like a small company that's, you know, almost like an outlaw company, if I recall. They were trying to go up against a much bigger promotion that was headed by someone who is clearly like a Vince McMahon type. Mm. It's pretty good what little I saw of it. But I'd like to actually find the rest. It's just one of those things I never got around to doing.
Yeah, I'm reminded also, I haven't read this yet either, unfortunately, but there was the Andre the Giant sort of biographical graphic novel.
Oh, cool.
That came out not too long ago. Mm. I don't know what's about it. Well, it was published in 2014. But I'm curious about it. And apparently the writer, Box Brown, has done a couple other comic books. One about Andy Kaufman's wrestling wrestling foray. Those are interesting. I find those are intriguing to me anyway. I'd really like to check those out.
Well, the way we're talking, it looks like the way that you can make a wrestling comic decent is really not to use the really famous people, because you're kind of cornered with them, as we were talking about earlier that Ed brought up. But yeah, if you create your own characters and develop them, if they have a wrestling angle to go with it, it seems to have a greater shelf life, like we just talked about with Headlocked and Ringside. I don't know if that's a Lawler cover. That might be.
It has his name there at the bottom.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
I think it's just tough, you know, to offer kind of the same wrestling product in a comic book. It's hard to compete against television, right? Like, I think, yeah, you something like Ringside, where you're going a little deeper. Mm-hmm. Is more interesting, or you know, behind the scenes, or doing something, you know, taking. I had an idea. If I ever get to talk to the WWE, one of the things I'd love to do is to do an ongoing title for them called the Shockmaster Chronicles. I just want to have the Shockmaster flying around in space, you know, with a cape and everything, and just solving mysteries from planet to planet or something like that.
Hey, maybe he can meet them with Spaceman Frank.
I wanted to do a Shockmaster game card so bad. I wanted to write it myself. But it is owned by WWE.
Right? Oh, yeah. I have a toy. They somewhere in my office here, I've got a Shockmaster toy that's still in the box.
Does it fall?
It did not come with a break. It unfortunately did not come with a breakable wall.
And a mask that falls off. Yeah.
Yeah. I there somewhere. And I can't. It's great. But
a great gimmick for the toy is that he couldn't stand up. He kept falling down. Yeah.
Hey, well, get ready, guys. As long as we're starting to talk about the bad, we were talking the good, the bad, and the ugly. There it is. That's great.
Is that a Stormtrooper helmet with maybe glitter on it?
Yes.
Fred
Ottman was under the mask.
It's aluminum foil.
How didn't they get sued for that?
I don't know.
Good question.
Well, you have to understand. Wrestling survived for many, 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 many years on the fact that nobody was paying attention to what they were doing.
Yeah.
There's a great story that Jim Cornette tells, that when he was running Smoky Mountain Wrestling in conjunction with the famous record producer Rick Rubin, he asked Rubin about should they bother to like pay royalties on like all of copyrighted music that they were using for ring entrance music, and Rubin told him like I work in hip hop, I steal music all the time, nobody cares.
But yeah, along those lines, I mean, you had a lot of that going on, like Batman spelled with two T's in the, what was it, the 60s, around the time of the Adam West and Burt Ward series. And you had, you know, then you had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. What was it, Smoky Mountain, USWA, whatever?
Yes.
Right.
Cowabunga.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
The late Mark Curtis, God bless him.
Oh, so these were gimmicks? Like somebody was actually like,
yes, yeah. whatever they need to fill in a hole in the card, the referee, the late beloved referee Mark Curtis, Mark Hildebrand, mm-hmm. would don this green body suit and go wrestle as Cowabunga, the wrestling Ninja Turtle. And yeah,
brilliant. Should have been in Chikara.
Yeah, Japan did a lot of that too with Leatherface, and you know.
By the way, Chikara must have done some wrestling comics or something, didn't he?
Lucha Underground did. And I always wanted to get my hands on those, actually, because I like Lucha Underground like more than I probably should.
Well, Lucha Underground did, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, I just searched for wrestling comicsology, and there's stuff I can't show you. Yeah, there's an anime series called Monster Wrestlers, and I think I might get in trouble with YouTube if I showed you the covers, because it's that kind of manga. It's yes.
I don't know about these. I'm gonna have to look this up later. You have to research this. I'm gonna have to research.
It's a good thing it's a late night show, but yeah, I feel weird showing it. But yeah.
So, well, if we're on the topic of bad wrestling comics, I can chime in.
We are. Let's go ahead, sir.
We might. This is Todd. You know, I do research for this. You know, but you know, but I have helpers. And Todd said to me, "The worst wrestling comic in history," and I think it's possible, is the Ultimate Warrior's Christmas comic.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Did you, Chris? You've seen that?
I've seen far too much of it. Yes.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Oh, yeah. From the planet or place of destructivity? Is that what it's called? The universe.
Yes.
Destructicity. It's got bizarre and disturbing. It's not even a story. It's just a bunch of pinups of full page of. Luckily for me, I don't have it. I looked at some of it online, but it was astounding. Some of the things that you not only wouldn't show, you wouldn't even want to think about Santa Claus and the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah,
enough said.
I just found a picture and I saved it. I was going to share it, and I said, "No, I can't do that."
Did you get from that?
Yeah, it looks like. The most charitable interpretation of this picture is the Ultimate Warrior mugged Santa Claus, stole all of his clothes, and is changing into them to assume the role of Santa Claus.
let's and go. That's the nice version.
Let's go.
Yep.
Let's go with that, please.
Yeah.
Not for the kiddies.
Yeah. Let's.
A nice Christmas comic. Whoa.
He was in, a dark place.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I don't know. I've never seen it, but
Sean agrees. Our viewer.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I heard that the CMLL comics, they self-published one some time ago, and I heard it was really rough. But I haven't experienced it. It's just what I heard.
So, about to share an image that you sent me in the private chat, Ed. So, what's this one?
I haven't read it, but it looks fascinating. I want to research.
I've seen that.
Okay, I want to research this some more, but it's it looks like a fairly old title, right? Castle and Key is.
It might be made to look old.
I think it is.
Oh, it is $3.50.
Yeah, because the art style is pretty modern.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful cover.
I've seen that at a convention.
Oh yeah. Okay. It looks really, really interesting.
Yeah, I found it on Images website. It looks like it got a publication date of 2021 for the latest collection.
What number is this one?
Let's see. I don't know if there's a number on there. It's Hand of Destiny, Castle and Key, 1st of July. I don't see an issue number on this one, though.
Okay.
I'll do a Google search for the image. See if we can find it. It looks like. Well, let me show you what I found on Image Comics for that, because they have at least one trade, so there had to be at least a few issues. And here we go.
I think that's a automatic for me.
La Mano del Destiny tells the story of a once champion luchador who, after being betrayed by his friends and amassed the ring, agrees to a Faustian bargain with the mysterious promoter. Oh wow, this is that's a good pitch line. Yeah.
Aren't they all?
He gains a new power, the identity of La Mano del Destino, in order to exact revenge upon his betrayers. Set in a swanky 1960s Mexico, where Lucha Libre is intrinsically woven into all aspects of society. I could keep on reading. This writer-artist cover is some guy named Jay Gonzo, which sounds like a pen name.
Top towel. Okay. I am going to like email my friend Ron, who's the owner of our local comic shop here, and I'm just going to say I must have this.
I don't particularly like luchador stuff, and I kind of want to check that out just based on the pitch line, so that's kind of cool. And apparently Jade Gonzo is a real guy who's been working at Image and Top Cow for a bit, so yeah.
How did that slip through the cracks?
Yeah, it looks familiar to me.
I guess there isn't really a single news source for wrestling comics. You kind of stumble into them.
It's like an illicit thing.
It's sort of like a lot of us working in games or RPGs, and there's not really one news source to advertise in. There's a lot of word of mouth and social media stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, it's like a wrestling. You have to know. You know, right? Underground a little bit.
One of my main memories of the game industry was finding out about stuff when somebody worked on it got pissed off on Twitter. It would blow up in a big Twitter fight. Like, oh wow, that's a thing that almost happened. Okay, all right.
Chris, are you on Twitter covertly? You haven't told anybody.
I cry too easily for Twitter.
All right. I got this video I want to share with you guys, but it's not really appropriate to the conversation. But there was a wrestling match apparently in the late 90s, early USWA, summer 1992. It's Santa Claus wrestling. It looks like a Christmas tree.
Santa Claus is what I call the next.
Yeah, and I kind of want to share this, but maybe next time we can do best or worst matches.
Santa Claus sort of wrestling story, and I wrote this up for the trade that we're gonna kickstart. But sometime in the 80s, you know, I'm pretty young still. I don't know if I quite believe in Santa Claus still, but I'm tuning into it. You know, I grew up watching Pacific Northwest Wrestling here in Portland. We had our NWA territory, nice. And it was right around, you know, it was December. And the big news is that our hometown hero, Billy Jack Haynes, he'd been gone from the territory a long time, but he was back. He was back, and he was going to wrestle on the main events for that evening. And, you know, the energy of the crowd is all excited, and the arena is decorated for Christmas. And there's even, like, a Santa Claus at ringside handing out candy canes, and everyone's excited. So they get to this main event. Billy Jack Haynes is just beating up some local bum. And then all of a sudden, the announcer, Don Koss, he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, Santa Claus is on the top turnbuckle. And ladies and gentlemen, Santa Claus just removed a tire iron from his jacket." So sure enough, Santa Claus jumps off the top turnbuckle, starts beating Billy Jack Haynes. You know, Billy Jack Haynes is bleeding, like, all just bleeding everywhere. And Santa Claus goes up to the crow's nest where they do these interviews, and he takes off his beard, and it's Rip the Crippler Oliver. And, you know, saying, like, you know, he was like the territory's biggest heel, who had also been gone a long time, but he's also back, and he's ranting and raving about how he's going to, you know, end Billy Jack Haynes' career and rule the Northwest again. So, you know, then he leaves the crow's nest. And Don Koss, the announcer, there it is. Yeah. Hey. Don Koss looks at the camera and he says, "Not only is Rip the Crippler Oliver an insult to the sport of professional wrestling, but he is an insult to Santa Claus and the spirit of Christmas itself." We'll be back with this.
Hey,
yeah. Like, this is the best television. It doesn't get any better than this. You know what I mean? It, it is the best TV ever of all time. There is Santa Claus. Santa Claus just practically killed him.
That's a, That's actual blood there, right?
Well, yeah, the, you know, he cut himself as they did back then, but there was kind of a lot of blood.
When was that, did you say?
This was the 80s, and I think I looked it up when I was I was a little bit older than I thought I was. I think I might have been like 13. So 1985, 86 or something. You know, I definitely was not believing in Santa Claus at that point, but it was still kind of a lot.
But did you believe wrestling was real?
I think I was still on the fence with wrestling. Like I started watching when I was like 7, and it's like, this is absolutely, this is 100%. You're 7 years old. This is 100% unscripted, unchoreographed. And yeah, like 12, 13, 14, you're like, okay, well, hold on. I've been in a real fight before. They last like 10 seconds. Like,
right. I figured it out myself too. And my grandparents never did. And they introduced me to it. You know, it was really very simple. If you threw me into the ropes, I wouldn't bounce back. It's just that simple.
And well, the thing is, I defend wrestling fans to non-wrestling fans. And I say, look, you know, people would get really hurt. They'd break their leg. Every once in a while, some guy would die, like in the ring or shortly after. Like Ox Baker once gave a heart punch, and like I think 2 days later, the guy died from. Yeah. He had a real, real health problem, and the impact, it triggered something.
And he died. And Ted DiBiase's father died that way.
Yeah,
so he was a wrestler.
So what did they do? They didn't just say, "Oh my gosh, this is a terrible tragedy, ladies and gentlemen. We're very sorry." They folded it into the story. Ox Baker. He called himself the Widowmaker, and he did not say show. You know, he folded it into his backstory. So, you know, there's some plausible, you know, deniability or something.
To take off on your Ox Baker story, I believe there might have been two injuries or deaths at his hands accidentally, and he used them both, like you said. And I think that's what led to a riot in Cleveland at one of his matches. It's on YouTube.
Oh, really?
I recommend seeing it if you've never seen it, because I think it's because of that reputation, and because he was continuing to do a heart punch to Ernie Ladd while he was down on the mat, the fans just thought he might kill him. And they attacked. They just outright attacked.
And you know, some of the real hard-nosed promoters, too, when you hear people talk about them, they would say to their wrestlers, you know, if you're out having a beer and somebody comes up to you and says, oh, you know, wrestling's, you know, fake, and blah, blah, you say, you had better knock their teeth in or you're fired, right? They're protecting their secrets pretty well. You know, that's going a long ways towards protecting the artifice. You know,
this is where we need to bring out John Stossel.
You know, I was just thinking that. Right. Dr. D. Yeah. David Schultz.
Yeah, there you go. You know, same thing. You probably should have figured it out at some point in your life, but I think you can be forgiven, you know.
Oh, yeah. Back at the table. But you know what, though? Even when you figured it out, when we watched in the 80s and even a little bit into the 90s, and this fascinates me about wrestling as a psych professor and social psychologist, as you go through the generations, there's a higher and higher percentage of people that know it's scripted. And you know, by the way, I think it's amazing that wrestling survived that. How many things could survive being discovered to be fake? Not many. And it did. What happened was in the 80s, you have something like 50-50 maybe. And when you have enough people in the audience that believe, it creates an environment where it seems more real. And you don't have that anymore. Now that's just dead. Now it's
like
all
watching a movie, sure. You get invested. Yeah. You still cuss at those characters. Even though
absolutely. And I liked it better that way when – even though I thought it, well, I thought, listen to me, I knew it was scripted. I liked being with a crowd that didn't know that, because you could play along easier. Now people watch wrestling and they critique it like a show, you know? We never used to think to do that back then, because you played along more, you suspended disbelief more.
Yeah.
When I heard an interview with The Rock around 2000, when he was talking about a match with Mick Foley, one of those great matches they had, but he was now breaking kayfabe. He said, you know, yeah, we should have ended that match different. Da, 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 da. And I thought, you know, I don't want to hear this. Right. I don't want to hear this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And sometimes, when, you know, I look at it, it was maybe inevitable that at some point, okay, yes, it's choreographed, it's scripted, and so what? You know, it's a great show. As my uncle used to, he would tell, my blue-collar uncle would tell my solidly middle-class parents, say, you can't fake gravity, right? Like, yeah. But I think it's gotten fascinating, and where now we're smarks, right? Like, we think we know business, and I think that they actually use that to their advantage as much, right? Like okay, you think you know the business, well, and then they'll use that to kind of lead us by the nose into thinking that, you know, some behind, like, there's part of me that thinks the Montreal screw job was scripted and choreographed. You know what I mean?
Heard that rumor.
You know, and fans are like, you know, as us fans, we think that it's a rare look behind the curtain, but maybe there's another curtain, right?
Yeah, then you could be right. You know, look how Vince McMahon used it to become one of the greatest villains ever.
Yeah. How brilliant.
I mean, if he doesn't get the negative heat for that because people disliked him at that time for doing it, that turned him into the Vince McMahon we all loved against Stone Cold, you know?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Oh, you know, I mean, before that, Vince McMahon was just Vince McMahon, but after that, he became the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, some of us, he's been the bad guy since the early 80s.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I'm going to regret saying this, but I remember talking to my dad, and he was, when I was into wrestling when I was a kid, he was like, this is stupid, and you're an idiot for watching him. One time my dad and I were talking politics, which is always a bad idea, and he was going on about how his side is right and their side's wrong. And I said, Dad, you know that Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan used to play poker, like, weekly.
Yeah.
Their joke was they were enemies during working hours and friends after six. They would get together in, you know, Tip's condo and, you know, drink whiskey and play poker, and he got so pissed off that the very idea that the show's, you know, the, if we want to call it, the pretense that he would see on the Sunday morning news shows wasn't what happened all the time. Just
didn't,
hey, Mike, I think that's a great observation. I think knowing professional wrestling is scripted is a great primer for realizing how much of the news and everything is actually scripted. But that's another topic. Maybe someday we'll all figure that out.
Yeah, I did see, and this is not a political jab at anybody, but I did see more than one article kind of pointing out how, you know, Donald Trump has been, you know, a guest at WrestleManias, and he's friends with the McMahons, and there was people kind of pointing out that some of his strategy or some of his, you know, appealing to his base was not too dissimilar from what wrestling, what, like, WWE does.
Well, he became the ultimate heel.
Yeah. like not dissimilar to what the WWE does to generate interest in a character or a pay-per-view or whatever. You know, we can all learn a lot from wrestling, right?
But, yeah.
I guess, you know, politicians included, I suppose.
All right. Well, I am getting a discreet text from my wife asking to come help with the 8-year-old food poisoning situation. So, we should have you back on when you guys launch a Kickstarter.
Yeah. Well, I would love to. Thanks a lot for having me back. Loved meeting you guys. And
yeah, you too.
You too.
I found out about some really cool projects that I'm going to buy and support. It's really, really cool. Appreciate being here.
If you guys get a landing page for Kickstarter, send it to me and we'll pimp it out. Speaking of which, Chris, your project is launching so soon. Do you have that link for us handy?
It's in the chat.
It's in the chat.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, there it is. Okay, cool. Let me show that off. Chris, Do you want to set this up for the audience as your closing thoughts?
Well, I've been writing and publishing since 1997, and wow, on Tuesday I'm going to come home from my day job and I'm going to hit the button and I'm going to turn this Kickstarter on and I'm going to see, you know, what happens next, because I'm kind of done with the game industry because I'm tired of shitty people doing shitty things to good people and getting promoted and patted on the back for it. And I'm sick of finding out who my friends are the hard way. And I am trying to make a world where writers are not treated like shit and can write what they want to write. And this is me and the 30 best writers that I could talk into going along with this. And it's a book I would be proud to buy. It's a book I'm even prouder to publish. I am pleased beyond my wildest dreams with the quality of the writing. And it's a book where talented people are just writing to inform and entertain and make you laugh and make you see something that we all love, and that's a good scary movie in a whole new light. And if you good people will come out and support this, I will continue to provide a place where creators can just come and create and they won't have to worry about getting plagiarized or their shit published with somebody else's name on it. Not that any of this stuff has happened to me in the last year repeatedly. you may notice that's Everyone's Gone to the Movies 1. We would love to do a whole bunch of these for you people and get into a bunch of other genres and things. But none of this happens if this doesn't fund. So please support this. Please share this to the length, the breadth, and the width of your social media presence. Please yell this out your window. Please shout this through the speaker attached to the top of your old Mount Prospect police car. If you got this tattooed, I'm sure we could talk about like a little cash remuneration there.
I've been sharpening it onto bathrooms at all the IHOPs in the central Colorado area. So
There you go. I buy you beers for that, man. I'm not a kid. I'm not kidding.
How about smoke signals? Is that cool?
I eat semaphores, heliographs. I'm a sucker for somebody who knows heliograph.
While speaking of buying us beers, if you like the BAMF podcast, like our content, buymecoffee.com/BAMFpodcast. I hate to say hit like and subscribe because everybody on YouTube says that. So I don't want to say that.
Like and subscribe.
But if you follow that link, you can sign to be notified the second that the Kickstarter goes live, and that's a URL you can spread to your friends who like scary movies, and really that should be all your friends.
I will be there day one.
Thank you so much. I mean, even if you're not into scary movies, do it for writers not getting treated like shit.
It's a good cause.
I'll vouch for that. I'm one of the writers on that project, and
very cool.
Chris is a dream to work with.
The covers look really great, and I'll be there day one, and I'll say, you know, if we be there day one, it helps a lot because then other people jump on board, and it looks great. I'll be there.
Thank you. That is the legend Hal Mangold who came up with that as a birthday present to me. This is the quality of people that I have working for with me. That cover was a birthday present.
Awesome. Now, if you just go to Kickstarter and search for Transgressive Horror, it's one of the first things that comes up, or there's this very long link there you can check out as well. And the link will be in the show notes. So, Tom, Cynthia, any closing thoughts?
Not really. Enjoyed this chat a lot. Actually, this might be my favorite one that I've been a part of.
And remember, next week we get to talk about the best Silver Age artists.
Yeah.
Sure, right.
Let's just keep that carrot out there.
And that's the inside joke. That's a show we never do that we keep saying.
I would like to say one little thing. Next weekend, I have a supplement coming out for my tabletop miniatures game, Urban Manhunt. It's called the Urban Manhunt Companion.
Okay.
And by the time we do the next one of these, I'll have some details if you wouldn't mind throwing it up, because it'll be available by then.
I would be loved to. Let's do this again in 2 weeks, and we'll talk about that. That would be awesome. And I think next week, same time, same channel, Chris and I are talking to one of the writers, maybe you, for Transgressive horror. I got it all out without stuttering too much, so I'm proud of that. Tom,
close hey, and Mike, I'll quickly yeah. add, and yeah. by the way, am I getting dark enough for you here? The sun's going down in Arizona. It's you're down dark, now, and yeah, now I can be menacing.
Tom, we ask ourselves, how much more black could that be? The answer is none. None more black.
So I just want to say that I'm writing the 51st edition of Champions of the Galaxy that will come out in July. Sweet. And I will perhaps next time we meet, I'll be able to give some sneak previews to some people who might be listening in on that.
That would be awesome.
So I'm enjoying it. You know, Chris, you know, as a creative and everybody here is a creator. That's an amazing process. It's never easy, but it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
55.
Yeah.
That is called Origins 2137. That is the next set. That's the year 2137. And we've got some big surprises lined up. I'll be mentioning them on this show as we lead up to July.
Cool. Awesome.
Perfect. That sounds like fun. All right. Wait, what's good, everyone? Thanks for coming. Ed, always a pleasure to have you on, sir.
Mike, good to meet you guys.
You too.
I'll see you in the internet sphere, Twitter.
Yep.
Place.
Internet right, sphere.
Thanks to our listeners and viewers. We'll catch you next time on the BAMP podcast.
Bye.